VOCM presents Nightline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. And now your host, Jonathan Richler.
Good evening, everybody. Happy Easter Monday. Thank you very much for tuning in and joining us. It's Easter Monday. It's the annual Municipal Mondays where Craig Scott, former councillor of Torbay, now the mayor, is able to join us. So, Your Worship, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'm super excited to have not one but two city councillors in the city of St. John's with us tonight. We have Ward 2 councillor, my councillor, Hope Jameson. Councillor Jameson,
hello.
Welcome to the program. We also have Councillor at Large, Maggie Burton, joining us again. Was this number three for you in terms of attendance for Municipal Mondays?
I think so.
Physically?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
My apologies for not bringing snacks. It was one of those weeks. All I had in the fridge was seal livers. I didn't think that over as well. Yeah. They're tasty.
But I've tried it.
It's an acquired thing, right? Yeah. Thank you all for joining us, and thank you for tuning in. I am excited because I just saw somebody walk by who looked like Dave Lane, and we have a fuller house
Yay.
Than we ever expected. Holy moly, this is going to be very interesting. And producer Dave Williams is here as well. Dave Lane, where are you going? Two Daves, one Maggie, one Hope, and one Craig. This is going to be a very interesting show. So while Dave and Dave duke it out there in the production booth, I got to say... Standing room only here on Municipal Mondays. This is the way I like to see it, so this is very exciting. Oh, look, he's giving his farewells. Perhaps he's gone to get us some coffees. That's what I'm going to imagine that that's
some
what
some dip for the seal livers.
Yes, some seal liver dip. What would you dip seal livers into?
Whipped cream.
Yeah, whipped cream, clearly.
Definitely.
Okay.
And then sweet and sour sauce.
Yes.
Okay. I was thinking butter, but, you know, kind of like a lobster claw.
Yeah, yeah.
But a dark, rich kidney filled with the most delicious parts of the codfish that they love to munch, the codfish belly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, whipped cream, eh? Okay. We're going to send in your suggestions as to what we can or cannot dip a seal liver into. At VOCM Nightline is the Twitter handle that we like to use. Of course, everybody does have their own Twitter handle. We have Hope for Ward 2, M.M. Burton, and at Torbay Today. These are the designations if you wish to address particular questions or comments to our in-studio guest tonight. We are looking forward to hearing from a number of other individuals across the province in terms of councillors and mayors and deputy mayors. We never hear from the bureaucrats because, essentially, you are the voice for the bureaucrats, much like the provincial government in that sense. But given the fact that today is the day of the resurrection, perhaps we can look towards a new format. Maybe the bureaucrats will finally be unleashed and we can hear from them as to what they feel is important. City managers, you're more than welcome to call in. It's up to you. I've got a few beads of sweat here on the foreheads of my guests. Because we always know that the relationship between the city staff and the councillors and the mayor is a productive one. It's a, I would like to think it is a seamless one from a spectator's point of view, but maybe Councillors Burton and Jameson can look at this for a moment, given the fact that this is your first 6 months or 7 months into the job. How is it? What was the transition like or the orientation amongst your own and those who work with you?
Well, over time, I mean, you get your sort of daily routine down and you form alliances, people that you tend to work with more than with others, just because, you know, there are 12 personalities around, or 11, sorry. I don't even know how many people are on council anymore. It's been so long. So 11 of us, there's a lot of opportunities to get to know everybody and work on little projects together and forming partnerships around common issues. That's been really fun. And also getting to know, you know, who to call, who to reach out to, who to ask questions among our staff. And we do have a really great staff at the city so far. That's been my opinion.
Yeah, and I have to say I've been extremely grateful to the staff for their generosity in terms of their willingness to answer hundreds of questions every day. How do I, where do I, who does this? And that's been extremely helpful.
Yeah, it has to be a steep learning curve for most of us who aren't necessarily in politics, but decide to become political, and, you know, and you can be political in so many ways, but until you're sitting in a chamber, I've only done it at a university level, and of course high school, which was fun, but it doesn't really count within the context of being accountable. Perhaps it's different now. Like, I know this kid, he's in grade six, he's an ambassador to the grade five class. It's pretty stressful.
I began my political career as a grade six kindergarten prefect. So I opened milk cartons every day for kindergartens, you know, learned how to really manage a room and work a room of people.
I ask my friend all the time if he is beginning to accept bribes or if anyone's asking for favors. So far, it's a pretty clean job.
He's running it clean so far.
Yeah. I didn't take any extra, you know, juice packets or anything like that.
I think that's grade seven.
That's when the
downward spiral starts. That's when you start watching The Wire. And everything goes south from there. So it's when you come in, and I used to work in government, and I remember every 6 to 8 months we'd get a new minister. It would be the shuffle, the cabinet shuffle. And most bureaucrats would roll their eyes because they knew that they'd have to spend the next month and a half, getting everybody up to speed. And therefore, government would be delayed.
Yep.
Because there would be a new mandate coming in. No doubt the deputy ministers and assistant deputy ministers may or may not be shuffled as well. So there was a whole level of burden that the other levels of bureaucracy would have to shoulder because they are the institutional memory. I don't think it would be the same when it comes to city councilors because you're all nonpartisan. So there's no changing of the agendas. It's just you're chugging along. You don't have a budget which varies from year to year. It's just that you have to learn the basic ropes. So I would assume that there would be a manual which would be supplied to folks like yourselves, or at least a manual in the format of or in the form of one or two human beings that would spend a week or two for orientation.
Well, we had a bit of a crash course the week after the election and
a couple days
straight of working with all of the executive team at the city, and they were really helpful.
That's wonderful. And how was it transitioning from councillor of Torbay to the mayor, Craig Scott?
It's a little different because the mayor has a little different role than a councillor.
Yeah, you got the whole chain.
You kind of need to build a relationship between council and the senior staff with the town. Our town is a little different in the, I guess, the bureaucratic level of what St. John's would be, but a little bigger than what a smaller town would be. And so our senior staff has been in place with the town for, well, several years, for my entire last term plus this term. So, you know, you have to get council up to speed. And one of the very first things that I had to do was, was create the committees that I wanted to have. So I created a new one, changed our committee structure a little bit, appoint which councillors are going to serve on which committees, and then and go forward from there, and then get staff in to give a overview of exactly what this particular department does and what they're responsible for. Because, you know, when you come in first and you're brand new, and if you haven't been following along closely, then you really don't know what your role is. I've heard, you know, in smaller municipalities, and I'm talking little ones, the councillors and the mayors are way more involved in the daily operation of the town, just for the simple fact that they don't have staff to be able to do that. They are kind of the front line, but everyone has a town manager, and it's, I mean, that relationship for me as a mayor and with our CAO of the town is crucial. Like, we're constantly, we speak every day and to make sure we're on the same page, or for me to get information that I need to be able to relate to the public. So it's different. Now I have to try and manage relationships between the councillors and the residents and staff, whereas before I just had to worry about myself and do my own thing, right? So it's a bit more work.
Have you received any of those late night winter snow clearing phone calls, 2 or 3 in the morning?
I get them all the time.
Still,
yep. And now with social media being the way it is, the people tagging you in Facebook posts or sending you private messages on Twitter and all this kind of stuff. You know, I try and, well, I answer everybody. But I also try and direct them, or I will direct them to the appropriate staff at town to make sure that their issue gets logged and recorded and followed up on. Because, you know, if I'm receiving multiple emails and messages and Facebook posts and all this kind of stuff, it's hard for me to be able to manage all that, to make sure that people's inquiries and questions are getting directed to where they need to go to get fixed.
I find it absolutely toxic. And on Facebook, for example, I call it my safe space because I deleted all politicians who I was friends with because I'm sick of what they talk about and what people direct towards them. All of it just nauseates me that, first of all, they're using it as a bit of a megaphone to retweet news stories that other people have worked on, and somehow this provides them credit. Or demonstrates that they're doing something. They're not. But also, the level of vitriol that average citizens will direct towards them by tagging politicians, members of the House of Assembly I'm referring to here. Let me just...
Yeah, because you didn't delete me.
Clear. No.
Thanks.
I'm okay with municipal levels. But I do see sometimes people direct comments towards municipal councillors or mayors or deputy mayors, and I am terrified. To me, I don't think you guys get paid enough to do what you do. And to me, that extra level of interaction, while it is supposed to be part of the democratic process, I think that this is a quagmire of bile that I would think would get in the way of managing your day-to-day operations of a large city such as the size of St. John's. What are we at, 160,000? What's the population of St. John's? 108,000? Okay. Yeah. I was including Mount Pearl in there. And my apologies to Mount Pearl. Or Torbay. What's the population of Torbay?
100,000 less than St. John's.
8,000. Gander. It's wherever we go across the province, there are smaller and smaller levels. And when we look at some particular examples that I can think of, but I won't necessarily need to mention, that made the national news recently with certain citizens calling out their mayors and deputy mayors and councillors for acts that they found inappropriate, it creates the news. It creates this level of discourse. I don't necessarily think that this is this experiment is not yet over. And that, to me, I admire all three of my guests in the room tonight because you're experiencing this firsthand. You are getting these piles of poop delivered to your door, as well as the bouquets. But the bricks themselves are heavier, I would imagine, because they're so easily thrown. Anybody want to comment on that?
I think the platform is not necessarily the issue here, though. I don't think that it's social media that is the problem, because people will call you on the phone to say those same things.
Right.
And it is important for us as councillors and mayors and municipal representatives of all stripes to reach people in the way in which they want to be reached. And social media is a very effective tool for communicating that way. I am somewhat selective with the way that I use social media because I'm busy doing my job as a counselor, but it is handy to say, what do people think about this? Or here's a message that everybody needs to get, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
We can't rely on it for everything because not everyone is computer literate or literate at all. So we need to kind of use every weapon in our arsenal in that way, but it's certainly handy.
Yes, it is. It's very handy to allow access, I guess, for your average citizen. And I guess we can, as you point out, Councillor Jameson, it's not necessarily those who are computer literate or not literate whatsoever, but your average citizen, we would like to think that we do have an average level of literacy for both computers and the written word, but that's not always the case. So that's great. Well, we have radio and we have other ways that people can get the word out, and even just dropping in to listen to what happens in the council chambers.
Mm-hmm.
Do
yep.
you find a lot of engagement in the council chambers? Let's direct this question to Councillor Maggie Burt.
Engagement in the council chambers? Mm-hmm. Well, people do watch the Rogers live stream. We have a small team of really committed volunteers that come in with Rogers and record all of the council meetings, and they have them up on their websites as well. So, you know, during the meetings, especially if Happy City is there and they're tweeting, there's a lot of engagement on what's going on. Some of the reporters do a really fantastic job as well, just like sort of live tweeting the points of interest from the council meetings. And I do think that once the council chamber's accessibility upgrades are done by the end of this year, hopefully, we'll be able to live stream our own meetings online so that we can make sure that everybody can have a chance who has a computer to watch them. And if you don't, you can watch at Rogers. There's no chance during a council meeting for anyone to get up and talk. Mm-hmm. Or anything like that. That's been a question that I've asked before. Should we have a 15-minute Q&A period during council meetings? That's something that would be an interesting point of engagement for people to reach out and.
I'm glad you raised that question.
We do that.
Yeah, I've heard.
And I think you're one of the only municipalities that I can think of in this province that does that. In fact, Whitless Bay was recently called out on social media, where else, for not allowing engagement from the gallery to the council. But to me, I would assume that that's pretty much par for the course. But Torbay, you're a bit of an outlier.
Well, I will ask at the start of our council meeting when we're amending our agenda if anybody in the gallery would like to address council before the meeting, during when we'd usually have proclamations or presentations. And if they put their hand up, yes, we'll write their name down and they can get up and speak for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the meeting, before we call the meeting to a close, adjourn the meeting for tonight, I will ask again if anybody in the gallery would like to ask a question about something that was talked about or presented at the council meeting. So it's a little more limited, the last one, but it's focused on what you just did, so they can ask questions about that, whereas the one prior to the meeting, they can ask any kind of question. And I mean, that'll go into what I want to talk about later, our new civic portal that we just launched. So.
Good. Excellent. Well, we have lots to talk about. We're going to discuss the civic portal. We're going to discuss municipal taxes. Councillor Burton has a few ideas that I'm looking forward to. Is it municipal taxes or is it tax reform? Maggie Burton?
Well, what I did was I reached out to each of the candidates in the ongoing PC and NDP leadership races, so the opposition candidates, and asked them some questions about what their perspective was on grants in lieu of property taxes. So I asked him to answer two questions. The first would be, in principle, should the province pay grants in lieu of property taxes to all municipalities, not just the City of St. John's? If so, how can the province move to implement those grants? And the second question, if the current financial situation is too difficult to introduce grants right now, how would they be implemented over time? For example, would you pass legislation to phase in grants over 10 years?
Interesting questions. We'll address those after the break, and no doubt we'll have some thoughts from Councillor Jameson from my ward, ward number 2. First, we got to go to our sponsors. Looking forward to speaking with you right after this.
VOCM's Nightline. Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. This is Nightline on VOCM.
You're listening to VOCM's Nightline. VOCM's Nightline is brought to you by Cowan's Optical. Cowan's Optical, where the focus is on you.
Welcome back to the program. Thank you very much. It's Municipal Mondays. We've got some super stellar guests and some who are attending as they drive home. Councillor Dave Lane had a guest appearance for a brief 4 seconds. It was kind of fun. Looks like I mixed up some wires there. And my apologies to Councillor Lane, and thanks for coming all this way. We do, however, have another Dave. Dave Williams is our guest producer tonight. You may recall him from the past 2 years being the producer of VOCM Nightline, but he's gone on to wake up at 5 a.m. these days so he can do the VOCM morning show as well as Open Line with Patty Daly. Wicked. We do have Ward 2 Councillor in the City of St. John's, Hope Jameson, also Councillor at Large Maggie Burton, both with the City of St. John's, and the Mayor of Torbay, let out of a municipal council meeting tonight as a result of possibly your Lord and Savior. I'm not sure if you're
this is our
believer or not, but it's an Easter Monday, and therefore.
But however it worked out this year, our council meeting so far is the opposite night of Municipal Monday. So usually we're on the same night.
Right.
Tonight, though, I did have a meeting prior. A meeting prior to coming here. So.
Right. It's. I think Dave needed to turn your volume up on the board a little. Because we have 3 guests in here, sometimes you'll get a little bit of ambient noise in your radios and your headphones. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for all of this. We do have one person on the phone. We're going to take this, and then we're going to be discussing some issues that we brought up before the break. But right now, Gwen Mercer is on line number one. Gwen Mercer is an advocate for justice and wants to speak about the Trent Butt trial. Hello, Gwen Mercer.
Well, good evening. How are you?
I'm very well. Happy Easter. I hope you had a good weekend.
Absolutely fantastic. I hope everybody else did as well.
It was very pleasant. Thank you. I enjoyed not cooking, I'll be honest.
Yeah, always good.
Yes. What's on the mind tonight there, Gwen?
I want to talk about a very sensitive subject.
Okay.
It's really about the horrible emotional and financial torture. Inclusive in the definition of abuse recently passed by the House. Today, on the news, you could see the horrible emotional and financial abuse that the victim suffers when the court grants horrendously long time periods between the court appearances, just so the abuser can utilize the court as a weapon to further emotionally and financially abuse the victim in their having to rehash the original abuse, so compounding it. See, this is no justice. And the question is, next year, will the abuser do the same thing again, trying to get out of running out of time?
Are you referring to the Jordan ruling where...
Yes.
Okay, well, I can tell you one thing. We have a backlog in our criminal justice courts for a number of reasons. And yeah, it may seem sometimes that it is on purpose that there are delays between court appearances, but it also has to do with the availability of counsel on both sides. Remember, when we're dealing with murder charges, there are two lawyers representing either side, which is for the protection of not only the Crown and the taxpayers, if you will, but for the accused. This is a built-in redundancy to make sure that due diligence is followed. We also know that we have a very seemingly limited pool of criminal defense and prosecution in this province, and therefore most of them are quite busy with, unfortunately, multiple cases. Therefore, their availability to prepare for said cases are challenging, as well as scheduling. So sometimes...
You just brought up something that I forgot about.
Okay.
Wasn't there just recently, within the past year, supposed to be a lawyer assigned to the victim as well to help them go through, understand what's happening in the court?
And which victim are we referring to in this case?
Well, any victim who needs the help of legal counsel.
Oh, I see.
I
believe that was just announced in this budget with respect to sexual violence. Now, I could be corrected here, and if that is the case, I believe it is 8 hours, somewhere between 6 to 8 hours of free counsel supplied by the government, which is a good start, but it is not sufficient when you look at the weeks that cases can, these things compound. But yeah, Gwen, I don't believe that I've heard anything on that recently, because I believe it's still being rolled out.
Yeah, I think so as well, if it hasn't been there to, with this today. I mean, look, this person, and I hate to mention the name, in this case today, I mean, he was known to the court several times previously in the domestic abuse complaints, and they were ignored, they were disbelieved, his record was expunged to look innocent, and... look where it's led.
Expunged as a result of an application to the courts?
Yes.
Okay, so that is a perfectly legal process to have your record cleared.
I agree, but what I'm looking at is the humanity of all of this.
Well, one could assume that justice is on the side of everyone, every citizen of this province and country. So how we look at these things has to be, I guess you have to take it with a bag of salt. Depending on what side you come down. I'm not defending this individual. I'm just providing the other side here, Gwen. When it comes to your access to justice as a citizen, no doubt you would expect the same treatment that Mr. Butt may or may not have received, according to the information you just provided.
Well, I just know that the victims are forced back into court by the abuser's needs, and the court allows it. in the name of legality and process. But there is no justice for victims in this. I've been through it. Many, many people have been through it. And instead, you're just left with a big hole inside. And there's another year of torture now for the mother of the child who's dead. You know, this something has got to be a little bit more humane than what's happening.
Quinn, I don't doubt that Quinn Butt's mother thinks about Quinn Butt every second.
Well, that's my point.
Inside or outside of the court, I don't think that would change. From
no,
my
I'm not saying it
personal
would.
Opinion.
I'm not saying it would, but a lot of this could have been prevented had the courts been set up differently than what they are. And this is what a lot of the survivors of abuse have met with the Minister of Justice to bring out these suggestions and to get them placed as fast as possible, because this is a perfect example of what's not working in the court system.
So, Gwen, before we go, before we say goodbye and move on to the next topic, I'd just like to ask you what you want changed within the justice system. You said that things didn't go, or things could have went better if things were different. What things would you like to point our listeners to?
Well, for starters, now that these two words have been added to the definition of abuse, and that is the emotional and financial abuse that's going on as well, mm-hmm. That has to be acted on now.
Yeah.
Instead of, and if there's that long a period of time that people are getting off, and there's been many of them in the past circumstances all across Canada, mm-hmm. because of running out of time, the Jordan ruling, there has to be something done more with a specialty court for abuse victims, and they need a different kind of training than what's there now with just the legal process. The judges have to be educated as to what victims are going through in the first place, so that when she first went to the courts, her case would not have been thrown out.
All right. Well, I don't think we need to send judges back to school if we're just adding financial or emotional abuse to the definition.
No, I'm not saying send them back to school. Just give them the added information.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of legal precedent for them to review or have their assistants do that. I don't think they need additional training. These are the top minds of our province. God forbid they should require additional training. I'm pretty sure they understand the significance of emotional and or financial abuse, but now that there's law behind it, now that there's legal policy, they can go from there. So that's an interesting point, and I guess unfortunately we're only going to be able to pass judgment on this amongst ourselves in the court of public opinion when these cases come to light. Gwen, thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, and we'll speak soon.
Yes.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
A lot of very important issues being raised there. We will, I guess, have to wait and see, unfortunately, and that requires the ugliness of having precedent being set by cases of emotional and financial abuse being brought to light. I mean, I think anyone in this room certainly knows somebody in their circle, whether they are within their circle today or in the past, that might have shared a story of financial abuse or emotional abuse from a former spouse or a current spouse. I can certainly think of five individuals off the top of my head, and there are multiple ways to deal with these situations. But if there's legal precedent, which is now being set, not precedent, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. I believe it is policy, but of course precedent would mean that there will be one case, and once that case happens, we will then have precedent. But until then, it will just be laws which will be enacted within the Legislative Assembly. Dark thoughts, but let's move on, folks, because we have a lot to cover in terms of municipal issues. So, Councillor Burton, let's go back to your topic that you brought up before the last break, which is taxes in lieu of?
Grants in lieu of property taxes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so, in addition to the justice reform, the province needs to have a serious look at reforming the municipal-provincial fiscal framework, of which property taxes and grants in lieu thereof are a big deal. So, 76% of St. John's revenues, for example, come from property taxes. So it's a huge burden for our city's homeowners and businesses. And the province doesn't pay any grants in lieu of property taxes to us. And other than PEI, we're the only province in Canada with that sort of setup. For example, in Nova Scotia, the provincial government paid out $48 million to its municipalities in grants in lieu of property taxes in 2008, and the province of Newfoundland and Labrador contributed something like $1 million for the entire province. So they effectively don't pay it. But aside from water fees, every property owned by the provincial government is exempt from those taxes, despite contributing heavily to the use of city services like roads, garbage collection, and public transit. And as a capital city, St. John's hosts a huge proportion of our most important provincial facilities, but the province has chosen to pass that tax burden onto the individual and the business owner in the city. So I would like to call for a renewed sense of urgency on this really important issue.
What about like the trickle-down effect, for example, of, all right, I go to university or my child will go to university and I live in Ontario or China and I'm going to buy a house on Elizabeth Avenue. So my kid can come here. The property taxes will go to the city, but the student is, they pay the fees to Memorial University, which is, of course, subsidized by the government. I'm just wondering, trickle down, that fluffy idea that everyone sort of contributes to the pot of the social good.
Memorial University also doesn't pay property taxes or grants in lieu of thereof, so they are one of the biggest. anyway, so it's to this point, it's really important to distinguish a community from a municipality. Mm-hmm. So provincial government buildings do add a lot to the communities they're located in, so that trickle-down effect of students or of provincial government employees eating at local restaurants or, shopping at local stores. But for the municipality, which has to pay for the roads and sewers, that means a lot of additional infrastructure and no tax revenue to back it up with. And St. John's is the clearest example where we maintain the infrastructure of a capital city, but because our top employers are all tax exempt, the cost falls entirely and unfairly on residents and a few businesses. So you can take an example. So two people work at the Confederation Building. One of them lives in Southlands. The other lives in Mount Pearl. Mm-hmm. They're both paying a little extra on their municipal taxes, but it hits the Southlands resident more. So they're paying more for the infrastructure because the Confederation Building is located within their municipality. So a person in Mount Pearl would pay less taxes for the use of the Confederation Building, even though they both work there.
Okay, so the Department of Motor Vehicles, which is in Mount Pearl, would provide an example.
Yeah, there are some buildings in other cities, of course, and in other towns, but St. John's just has like a really, really large number of
sure.
those properties.
We're the cluster, but we have the largest population, we have the most parking spaces, and we have the widest thoroughfares, and this is the center of commerce. All the other areas built up around St. John's, so correct me if I'm wrong here, Your Worship, as a result of population sprawl. So this is very interesting. So how do we accommodate our friends and neighbors like the government who have buildings all throughout our municipalities? Very good question.
Well, and I got answers to my questions from Tony Wakeham and Chess Crosby, the PC Party candidates, and also from Jerry Rogers and Alison Coffin, the NDP candidates, and they all had various things to say about it. So Chess and Allison both agreed that a phase-in would probably be the best approach. If Chess Crosby said that if it turned out that, upon further review, there seemed to be a need for it, then a phase-in would be a good idea. So that would mean looking at that $40 million that Nova Scotia gives its municipalities, phasing that in over an extended period of time would be a good way to do that. So they all submitted answers to me, and they're up on my blog, which is just at maggieburton.com, and you can read them there. But it might not be possible to implement the full amount of whatever the two levels of government agree on immediately, but I think that phase-in is the clearest answer that came out of my little survey to all the candidates.
Very interesting. And no response from the current government?
I haven't reached out to them yet, so I thought that I would start with the opposition first, and I'll try to get some answers from our current government. Back in 2011, I think it was, the city came out with a, let's see now, yeah, it had a position paper, the city of St. John's did, a grant in lieu program that would equal 80% of the property tax on provincial buildings. Mm. And then in 2013, the city put out a press release acknowledging that discussions had begun, but, you know, 5 years later and a change of government later, we still don't have any action on this issue, and yeah. we're gonna have a lot of property taxes.
Discussions, strategic initiatives, task forces, all of these are interchangeable, with the expression kicking the can down the road. You can review things until, well, the Torbay cows come home, frankly. Yeah. And as we know, one of them came home recently, which was a good news story, or at least was at home and finally got let into their home as opposed to leaning up against the side of...
If the province doesn't start to pay up, maybe the cows will have to pay property taxes on their homes too, which that would be one of the other solutions to grants in lieu.
It could be an interesting solution. I think there's a lot of animals around the municipalities which could do a little bit more for that free hay.
They really
know
could.
Know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Are they really pulling their weight?
Are they?
That's an important question.
These animals, they're just one step away from wearing pajamas in daylight. In public, right?
Yeah.
And you know what I'm talking about. All right, we're going to go to the break. Afterwards, we're going to have a number of other interesting discussions. But folks, follow along at VOCM Nightline. Send in your questions or comments there, and we will speak with you right after this.
This is Nightline on VOCM.
Hi, welcome back to the program. We're having a discussion about acronyms and housing, which we'll get into momentarily with War 2 Councillor Hope Jameson. But the mayor of Torbay is sitting to my left. We have War 2 Councillor Hope Jameson sitting to my right. And directly in front of me, across the table, we have Councillor-at-Large Maggie Burton. Through the double-pane glass window, there's a contemplative producer, Dave Williams. I don't know what he's doing, but it looks like something is wrong with the submarines. Nuclear buttons. Very, very concerned. Perhaps it's because he's been up since 5 a.m. And Patrick Myler, our regular producer, get well soon, buddy. It's the Easter flu. Hopefully your health will be resurrected as your Lord and Savior was. Is it Sunday or Monday that Jesus came out of the cave?
You're asking the wrong woman.
To boss?
Sunday.
Lads?
Sunday.
Lasses? Sunday. Okay, Easter Sunday. So Easter Monday is all about the parade and the bonnets and just relaxing.
Which it's a federal holiday.
I don't know. I want to talk about this in the second hour. Why is it that we don't have holidays which are the same across the country or within departments, federal, provincial, municipal? Why can we not coordinate these when we are trying to get our families together around a table? Wouldn't it be helpful if everybody had the same schedule? That's something that I want to put in everyone's head, and we'll talk about that after the news, because I think it's important, and this was asked to me by an individual. Thank you, Phyllis, for your contributions. We will discuss that perhaps in detail at a later date, but no doubt you are listening right now. Now, let's go to the mayor of Torbay, His Worship Craig Scott. We're going to be discussing the new portal. Yet again, your website is sure it's more fancier than Facebook.
Well, you know, I guess last year I was at FCM, and even before that, when we've been talking to people who do our communication strategy and our web, and we're always looking for ways to reach out to residents, to give them more information, because, you know, the more information that residents have, the better questions they're going to be able to ask you. And the more, the better the questions, the more thought that goes into it, it will make you think, well, am I doing the right thing? Am I not doing the right thing? And find ways to do things better. So the one lesson I've always took away is talk to people where they are. If you try and force people to go to where you're talking, then you're missing a lot of people. So this is where social media comes in. A lot of people are discussing on social media.
Okay.
So one of our things that we've been working on is with our council meetings and providing residents with more information so that they have what council has when we sit down to make a decision, and they're wondering in their mind, well, how did you come to that decision? What information did you have? And the worst question that I ever get from anybody is they come up to me and they say, I heard that you're going to be doing this or you're going to be doing that. Hopefully on a go-forward basis now from this new civic portal that we've created, and people are going to come to me and they're going to say, I read in your council package that you're doing this, you're doing that. Can you answer that question? Mm-hmm. Instead of the rumor mill, which is 90% of the time is wrong. So the way this works is on Friday afternoons, we as councillors receive our council package for the following Monday meeting. And that has all the information in it, our agenda, committee meeting minutes, the prior minutes, motions that are going to be coming forward to council. Up to this point, what we've provided to people is our agenda, which basically one page or two pages. This is what we're going to be discussing in committee, you know. Now they can go on to our new portal and they can access it from our website. And it has links to all the supporting information. Mm-hmm. So it'll have, for instance, right now, there's a link to the 33-page planning report from the committee, just the minutes from the planning committee. And that has a lot of the background information that committee discussed over a period of time to come to a decision.
33 pages of minutes?
Wow. That's just one portion. Like our council package, when I open it up on my iPad for a meeting every Monday, is over 200 pages.
Well, I just like a motion for the floor. I think if you're over 20 pages, your minutes should be called hours.
Right. So it's not, I mean, obviously it wouldn't be feasible to print off 200 pages set them in the council chamber for residents to have a look at during the meeting. Mm-hmm. So now they're going to be able to, they can log on and they can, over the weekend before the meeting, they can go through everything and see what it is actually that we're going to be doing. And you mentioned before about how some councils there's residents are complaining about council doing backroom this, that, your thing. The purpose of this is for our council to be upfront, transparent, and give the residents exact same information that council gets. So we're not dealing with two packages and council just sitting down with their iPad at a council meeting, going through supporting documentation while they're trying to debate to make a decision that the residents don't ever see.
Because minutes have to be approved from the previous meeting before they are posted publicly. I think that's the case for all councils, right?
Therefore, you
need to have a dedicated staff to make that timely.
Yeah. Okay. But what I'm talking about here, though, is the council package that's going to be coming up for the next meeting. This stuff is recommendations and supporting documentation and motions that are going to be coming forward. So once that is presented in a public meeting, that's public information at that point, so anybody can get it. Before I was on council, after the council meeting, I used to get an email from the staff at the town with this council package in it, so I could take all that information and write stories for my blog to make sure that I had some accurate information as I was going forward. But I think this is an excellent step for us. It's kind of growing on decisions that we made last council to be more open and transparent and give everybody the best information available. And I guess the next step is to potentially webcast our meetings. And because my feeling on that is, why should it somebody that's sitting in the council chamber have more information than somebody who's sitting at home? When they sit down to read your minutes, they should be able to understand exactly what happened at a meeting and not be left wondering, why is this that way? And when somebody that's sitting in the council chamber who has the benefit of getting up after the end of the meeting and asking a question to council, say, why did you make this decision or what was to that? And then I can provide them with an answer. So
yeah, a lot of preparation in advance leads to less confusion. So torbay.ca is where you can go to find all of this information. And just looking, if you click the top right-hand menu, clicky-click icon. I don't know what this looks like on a mobile app, but looking at the website, I'm assuming it's all about mobility. The menu is very big. I don't think the City of St. John's website has as many. Councillor Jameson, come on over here, have a looky-loo. This is ginormous.
Goodness.
You have everything from, there are 10 departments in your service and your business and things to do, resources, government. How is it that you only have 8,000 people living in Torbay? Your worship, this is the Disney World of information right here.
Well, to me, you want to make sure that residents have all potential possible information, because they elect you to go there and do a job on their behalf and to make decisions that are in the best interests of the community. If they have the information that you have and they're going to provide you with questions and suggestions, now granted, as an elected person on council, ultimately is up to you as an individual to make a decision and a vote in a particular way.
Yes, sir.
Respect the information that you're given from residents and their opinions, and then take all that into account to make your decision. It might not always reflect exactly what that person wanted, but at least they know that you listened to them and you took that into account. And now with the extra information that we're going to be providing, they can see where the rationale came from to be able to make those type of decisions.
Wonderful. Thank you for this. Just FYI, folks, on the 29th of April, that's a Sunday, at the Jack Byrne Arena, there will be family indoor movie night in Torbay. Yeah. And I'm pleased to announce it will... No, I don't know. That was the former movie. I don't know what's happening this time. But you could have seen The Lion King on the 28th of January. What's awesome. The movie going to be?
I have no idea. I'm sure it'll be a good one. It'll be family-oriented.
How about some Chuck Norris movies? How about like Delta Force or something? No? That's really not family-oriented.
Well, I think that we were having a discussion a little while ago, and I was talking to some of the staff from our community services,
uh-huh.
that we need to start looking at programs for teens between, say, 15 and 18. Those ones that seem... You always have stuff for adults and seniors, and mm-hmm. we always have stuff for little kids. We had to make sure that we're providing services for our teens and something for them to do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good that you brought that up. I live in Ward 2, and just before we go to the news here, during lunchtime, the Holy Heart Brother Rice kids just swarm the supermarket up there and Churchill Square. And I'm known around as the fellow who will tell someone to pick up the stuff that they throw on the sidewalk. No, they're sandwich wrappers. I'm that guy that tells them to pick it up. But, Bolt, every now and then I've been walking by Century Park with my dog, and there are some kids playing basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So during lunchtime. So this is a service that all regions can benefit from. And particularly on a day like this, which is Easter Monday, where there's a holiday and kids are out for the week, it's good to have things for them to do. It's interesting. Maybe we can talk about that further in detail at a later date about what we can do to keep our kids occupied as opposed to looking for reasons to stay on the couch, because it's important that we look to their mental health as well as their physical health, because I think the two are very intertwined. We're going to go to the news at the top of the hour. We'll be back for the second hour. Got a couple calls lined up, but also some discussions to be had. Councillor Jameson is the committee chair for housing within the city of St. John's. We're going to be speaking with Councillor Jameson about the learning curve and the level of willingness to help those who are in housing, and how we can all, as citizens, do a little bit better. We'll be right back.
This is Nightline on VOCM.
Hi, welcome back to the show. It's Municipal Mondays. We're in studio with Councillor at-large Maggie Burton with the City of St. John's. We have Ward 2 Councillor within the city as well, Hope Jameson, also the Mayor of Torbay, His Worship Craig Scott, former Councillor, now Mayor. It's the progression, right? It's the duty which calls and continues to keep you in your seat. So thank you for that. And Councillors Burton and Jameson, this is your first term. Are you still excited? Are you sick of it all? We're 6 months in?
No, excited every day.
Okay, yep. Councillor Jameson, Councillor Burton, both excited?
Oh, totally. Yeah, and I get to work with people like Councillor Jameson here. My life is great.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well,
ubiquitously lovely.
That's the enthusiasm that I want to see in all of our councils, in all of our municipalities. We don't... Negative conversations don't get you very far, and there's unfortunately several examples around our province that we could point to. Witless Bay being one, Belle Island, another, Spaniards Bay in the past. But hey, we've got what, 200 odd municipalities? 230, I think?
I guess. I think it's 237 or something like that.
And then the local service districts, there's about another 150 odd. So, you know, those are good odds, I guess one could say, when it comes to acrimony. Here's a question before we go to Happy Valley, Goose Bay Deputy Mayor Bert Pomeroy. Here's a question to, I guess, the city itself. But Torbay might want to weigh in on this as well. It's very difficult to find information. Minutes are scant. Often you ask questions, but answers are not always forthcoming. This is directed towards the city of St. John's. Are there private meetings before regular Monday meetings? Councillor Burton or Jameson? This is a something that came up in a few people's campaigns during the lead up to the last election in 2017. Are there private meetings before the regular Monday meetings?
Mm-hmm. And I think Councillor Burton and I heard pretty loud and clear that transparency was a forefront issue for people when it comes to this council. Mm-hmm. There is a provision for special meetings. There is one if there is one of the three things that we're allowed to discuss in private that needs to be discussed. So those are legal matters, mm-hmm. human resources, and intergovernmental affairs. Mm-hmm. So those are the things we're allowed to discuss in private. At present, if we have something like that to talk about, we do meet before the regular meeting. Yeah.
Okay. And these are closed door, so there are no minutes which will be posted on a website, of course, because there are matters for council and legal counsel or anyone else.
Yep.
And we've been doing a bit of a casual jurisdictional scan about what best practices are in that regard. There's a great document that I believe it was the city of Guelph, or no, it was the ombudsperson in BC put out that sort of indicates how municipalities should go about speaking in private if that's warranted. And so there's a really interesting bit in there in which the sort of assumption is that all meetings will be public. And if there is something that needs to be discussed in private, there needs to be a motion made that clearly delineates why.
Yeah. So
and then you close the meeting.
Yeah. They said instead of having a regularly scheduled weekly private meeting before the public meeting, it's preferable to close part of a regular council meeting if the subject matter being considered is relating to one of the specific exemptions, which, according to the City of St. John's Act, can only be intergovernmental affairs, HR, and legal issues right now. So that's something that I think that we should keep talking about, mm-hmm. Pushing for stricter limits on what we can and can't talk about in special meetings is something that's very much on our mind right now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for answering that email from our listeners. And we're going to go right now all the way to the Big Land. We're speaking with the Deputy Mayor for Happy Valley Goose Bay, Councillor Pomeroy. Deputy Mayor Pomeroy, how are you tonight?
How are you doing?
I'm well, sir. Happy Labrador Flag Day week, month.
Thank you very much, sir. We're very proud to be flying our flag here in the Big Land.
It's a beautiful flag.
Yes, sir. I wanted to call in just to touch base April the 1st. The town has adopted new civic numbering regulations that came into effect on the 1st of April.
And, right.
For any listeners that are out there from Happy Valley Goose Bay, I think it's important that they know that these regulations are in place. And if they want further information, they can certainly check out our website or contact the town office. So it's a set of regulations that were brought, that we put together based on input, I guess, from a number of people in the community that raised concerns over the last number of years, of particularly from first responders and taxis. Taxi operators had difficulty finding residences or properties in the town because they weren't numbered properly.
Yeah, and obviously this is much more crucial if there's a life on the line as opposed to your double cheese and pepperoni pizza being delivered on time.
Right. Yeah,
but both have their significance in one's life. There's also a fine attached to this, which I find excellent, because this way you're going to see some compliance. $100 if you don't put civic number.
It depends. I mean, as per the Municipalities Act, you know, under the offenses for not following these regulations could be a minimum of $100 up to $500.
Oh.
For first offense, there could be, you know, a jail term involved or both. And for a second offense, it could be $500 to $1,000.
So if I don't put a number on my house, I could go to jail?
Well, I mean, it would seem a bit extreme, but as per the Municipalities Act, but most likelihood would be just a fine.
Okay.
And on the first offence, second offence, perhaps a fine as well. And, you know, so I think it's so important because we've had cases in the past where our fire department has had trouble trying to find numbers. And, you know, most fires or most responses, you don't usually see smoke or fire, so... They'll respond and sometimes had confusion trying to find a particular address.
My goodness. Don't take this the wrong way, sir, but Happy Valley Goose Bay is not very large.
Well, actually, I mean, it's a fairly spread out community. There's a population of 8,000. We have about 80 kilometers of roads.
Uh-huh.
So it's a fairly, you know...
It's the distance, it's the sprawl that makes the difference.
Yeah, it's kind of spread out throughout the area, so... Some of our streets are rather long, and some of the older parts of town, the numbering is very difficult. And even some newer parts of town, you could go three or four houses before you perhaps see a number.
And I suppose the first responders themselves, you might be seeing new individuals coming to Happy Valley Goose Bay to be employed as a first responder. Therefore, they might not know the town.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, mm-hmm. there could be paramedics that come and move the town or, and are not quite familiar with the town, and they know where a street is. They go and they look and they try to find the number. They start counting all the way down, you know? So we've had some issues with that. And the issue came to light, I guess, to council in our February meeting. We had a mm-hmm. presentation to council about the importance of having civic numbering in the community. And at that point, we had been working on some regulations, and I guess the timing was right. And in our March meeting, we passed the regulations, and they come into effect as of April 1st.
I know that it was brought up that within 10 minutes, most people who are in cardiac arrest would have already developed irreversible brain damage. So it's more challenging when your house is not on fire to respond to a cardiac arrest. And of course, you're relying on the individual who's calling for first responders to begin with. You're also relying on a number of vehicles to get there on time. How large is your first response unit in Happy Valley Goose Bay? You do have sprawl. Therefore, I'm wondering, I think about this number in terms of timeliness, do you have enough cars?
Well, I mean, we have an ambulance service here, and as you know, Jonathan, prior to last fall, we had a lot of issues with our ambulance service in the community. Mm-hmm. There were some issues as to it was operated by a private operator, and the issue of where the ambulance bay was located and response times are well documented. There's been some issues where it's taken as much as 20 minutes, maybe an hour sometimes, for a response to a call. Okay. And, now that's changed quite a bit since last fall. Minister Hagee, as you know, canceled the contract with the private operator, and now it's being provided by the health authority, and we haven't had any complaints since then.
Good luck, and I hope that no one ends up in jail, and I hope that your local hardware stores have fast and furious business on selling numbers.
That's right. People need to realize that, if there's no number on their house, we'll make sure there's one put there.
Groovy.
And either that's to affix it to the property on a post in front of their yard, the number will have to be there because it's very, very important that people comply, and it's for the safety of everybody.
Can I just take like a piece of plywood and nail it into the ground and paint the number?
No, you can't.
Okay.
No.
So there are rules?
Follow the regulations. Yeah.
All right. Good to know. Thank you. And I'm not making light of the situation. This is just the way my brain works, Deputy Mayor Paul.
Yes.
Okay.
That's okay. It must be all that fog.
Yes, sir. Enjoy enjoy your spring, and I look forward to our next conversation.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. I just saw that there's a media advisory that there's going to be a counselor or two at The Loop tomorrow, which officially closed today, but there's an announcement. Councillor Burton, you're going to be there.
I am indeed. I'll be the council lead on a new exciting project for the next little while that we're going to work on in tandem with Happy City St. John's in a collaborative, first of its kind type of project, and I can't say what it is till 11 a.m. tomorrow.
Until 11 a.m. So there's an embargo on the details.
Okay. It's going to be very exciting. So we're going to announce it at the Loop tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Yeah.
Wonderful. I hope that there's a good turnout.
I hope so too.
As someone with an inside scoop, I can say it's a very, very exciting project.
Oh, yeah, good.
It's going to be fun.
Well, I wish that, I'm not going to wish my time away, but there is some good things that will happen at 11 a.m. Commander Williams has his hand up. Yes, we're going to speak with Everett Farrell on line number two, and then we'll take our break, and then we're going to talk about housing with Hope Jameson, who is committee chair of Housing for the City of St. John's. I'm looking forward to sharing some information about that. But right now, Mr. Farrell is on line number two. Happy Easter Monday, Everett. How are you?
Yes, and the same to you, Jonathan. And I hope that you and your guests had an enjoyable, relaxing Easter weekend. Your guests, really, my municipal colleagues, because, Jonathan, I've been a councillor with the town of Yarn for the past 16 years. In fact, I got my 16-year certificate just last year.
Amazing. Congratulations. Lucky
so
16.
Yeah.
I hope we make it to 16 years, too. Hey.
Yeah. Come on, we go.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Jonathan, more than likely, friends of mine who are listening to your show tonight will wonder why Everett Farwell, chairperson of the Bjorn Peninsula Joint Council, is discussing salmon with Jonathan, and not the failed attempt by Mr. Paul Antle, owner of New Dock, to purchase the Marystown Shipyard. Jonathan, I can assure you and your audience and your guests that myself, our Joint Council executive and membership are very, very concerned, and that I will be reaching out this week to President Rick Farrell of Unifor Local 20 and his executive. I'm also going to be contacting our community partners and the Marystown Town Council, our MP and MHAs, Jonathan, to see if we can have a meeting and see if there is a way forward for further discussion between Kiewit and Mr. Antle. And hopefully at the end of the process that Mr. Paul Antle will be the new owner of the Marystown Shipyard. Now, I can't give no guarantees, certainly here tonight.
Yeah, obviously. So I think we should probably drop it. Let's talk about it next week when you have more information, because pie in the sky conversations like that, I think, will create false expectations. And you never know. Sometimes people come into the conversation halfway through. So, Mr. Farwell, with the respect, with full respect to you, and the Marystown Shipyard and those involved, why don't we leave that until we have a full amount of time to discuss. And let's briefly discuss catch and release of salmon.
Well, just prior to that, Jonathan, certainly I'm confident that you and your guests and myself will all agree that there appears to be more discussion concerning our fisheries than ever. And certainly that includes the recreational salmon fishery and the health of the salmon stock. Jonathan, prior to our discussion tonight, I feel personally that I should inform you and your listening audience of a number of tasks that Prime Minister Trudeau directed to the Minister of Fisheries, Oceans, and Canadian Coast Guard to do. Jonathan, he sent that minister a mandate letter on August the 19th, 2016, and I think a couple or three of the comments would be quite relevant to our conversation, and it'll only take less than a minute.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, we got about 3 minutes before we have to go to the break, so let's go for it.
Okay, well, what he said was, as Minister of Fisheries, Oceans, and the Canadian Coast Guard, your overarching goal will be to protect our three oceans, coasts, waterways, and fisheries, and ensure that they remain healthy for future generations. And then Prime Minister Trudeau outlines the minister's top priorities, and I included three of them. It was to restore annual federal funding for freshwater resource and research, restore funding to support federal ocean science and monitoring programs, and three, to ensure that decisions are based on science, facts, and evidence, and serve the public interest. You know, that's basically what he was told to do, and I mean, it's very important, I think, on a go-forward basis, both in relation to salmon stocks and other endangered species that, you know, just be taken at full value.
Yep. So we always have discussions here in this province that we feel underrepresented by the Department of Fisheries and Oceans.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
In their defense, there's more than one ocean to look after, but it seems that we get the short end of the stick time and time again, and I frankly don't even bother making any communications requests to the department because I've never had any luck.
Exactly, exactly. Jonathan, I know we only got a little time left now, but I wanted to get those points in there, you know, at the risk of not having enough time to discuss really what I want to discuss.
And those are good points to make. Absolutely.
So one point that I want to make sure now in relation to you are aware that I said that I feel that DFO should be shouldering a major portion of this responsibility for declining salmon stocks. And I don't feel, Jonathan, that DFO is making an adequate effort to stock rivers with young salmon. You know, both in rivers that currently have salmon or rivers that have no salmon. Take, for instance, down here on the Buren Peninsula, we got about six or eight rivers down here that years and years, decades ago, that the scientists had researched. And they even identified the spawning areas where the salmon could spawn, and there's absolutely nothing have been done to stock those rivers with salmon. And I'm sure that's the case all over the province.
Okay. And I'm going to ask a stupid question here. What do they stock them with? Where do they get these salmon? Where do they come from?
Well, I was going to get into that too, Jonathan, because
okay. Can you make
another ridiculous situation down here.
We got about 30 seconds, so if you can make that answer really quick to help me understand, that would be excellent, sir.
Okay, in rivers that they currently don't have scheduled, there is a number of salmon rivers down here that are not scheduled. At least if they're not going to schedule them, they should trap the salmon that are going to enter those rivers for stocking purposes and begin a full stocking program all across our island.
Okay. Thank you for the answer. I'll have to look into that, and we'll perhaps be able to address this in greater detail at a later date. Everett Farwell, thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you, sir.
Cheers. Didn't realize that you could pick up salmon from one river and drop them into another. That sounds pretty magical. I can't see that working for other species, and that would be a bit of a system shock, I would imagine. But I suppose if it's been done before in terms of scheduling and unscheduling rivers, I need someone to help me out with this information, and no doubt we'll speak with Everett in the near future about that. We're going to go to the break. We'll be right back.
This is Nightline on VOCM.
You're listening to VOCM's Nightline. VOCM's Nightline is brought to you by Cowan's Optical. Cowan's Optical, where the focus is on you.
Thank you very much for tuning in. We just said goodbye to Councillor at Large Maggie Burton, who is going back to her house to look after her, no doubt, wonderful children. But I suppose they're in bed at 9:30, given their age. But who knows? It is a holiday for the entire week.
I don't know what your children are like.
I don't have any kids. That's the it's the way it is. I know lots of youngsters, but I don't have any children. But if I did, they'd be in bed at 5 p.m. or they'd be grounded. Let's see how far that would get me. If only I had a time machine in an alternate universe to see how they would laugh and laugh and laugh. But anyway, let's talk about, speaking of houses, let's go to housing. Hope Jameson, Ward 2 Councillor, you are the committee chair for housing within the city of St. John's. There's lots of challenges. There are lots of challenges and rewards when it comes to being able to provide housing and to oversee the ups and downs. Can you take us through the basic statistics, and we'll go from there?
Sure. So the city has been in the social housing game for coming up on 3 decades now. We're coming to the end of our most recent housing plan and evaluating that now. And then we'll be launching a new 10-year strategy and hopefully the fall, if all goes as planned. So it's a really excellent point to sort of look at how far we've come and where we want to go in the future. So at present, we have 454 units of social housing. And those are divided into rent geared to income units for those with the greatest need and low end of market units. So those mainly are rented at a flat rate, and that's for people who, for whom market rent is just a little bit out of reach. Mm-hmm. And this is really great. The city punches well above its weight in terms of a municipality when it comes to housing, and we see it as a priority because we understand that nothing happens without housing when it comes to improving one's situation. That has to be the first thing that's addressed. It's the most basic human need is shelter. So I think that we are doing lots in that arena. There is always more that we can be doing, so we're looking at creative ways to do that in the future.
How much of your time as committee chair, or how much of the time of the committee is taken up with questions and requests to do more than the city is currently doing or able to?
I think, well, from my point of view, I get to talk to a lot of individual residents for whom their situation is untenable and they need something else. Mm-hmm. And so I am able to sort of assist them in finding their way into our housing system as much as I can. And there, of course, we have a couple of buildings where we have more than 100 people in one building, and so there are issues that arise with that. So fielding things of that nature and helping people to sort of exist more seamlessly within our housing.
Do you mean because the units are so close together? Or?
Well, apartment living breeds a certain sort of social dynamic.
That's true. It does.
So that's never going to be seamless. So, yeah, it's just working through issues and creating a healthier social climate within those has been some of what I've done so far. So there's the sort of like operational question and then the longer term visioning question. And so both of those are on my burners right now.
We talked off the air briefly about the differences with respect to family units and single parent units or just single individuals. Seems that there are less housing units available for those who are single or single parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in a situation right now where our demand, or rather our supply, is not well matched to the demand for social housing. So we have lots of units that were built a couple decades past when there were a lot of families living in poverty. People had more children than they do now in a general sense. And so we have a lot of 2 and 3 bedroom units and 4 bedroom units that are not we're not seeing the demand for those in the same way that we have in years past. Whereas in our 1 and 2 bedroom units and the more apartment style units, the demand is enormous and it well outpaces the supply. The waiting list is more than a year
for those.
We get a couple of vacancies a year. And so that's really challenging because we know that the majority of people really hard hit by poverty are either single people or single parent families. And so we know that that need is there and that need is very dire for the people that it affects. Mm-hmm. And our ability to handle that is limited. So we're looking at a few ways around that. There's some federal money that's recently been announced, the details of which are forthcoming for renovation of existing social housing. So there are some opportunities within our existing housing stock where we might be able to split a 4-bedroom into 2 2-bedroom units, which would help to cover some of that demand.
Makes sense.
But there's always more to do, of course.
When we look at the disbursement of the housing units across the city, I mean, I know that obviously there are housing units all around the bays and all across the province, but City St. John's itself, there are concentrated areas, but are there housing units or all across the boundaries?
Yeah, they're mostly more two, but they are spread out through the city. So we have things that are more easily identifiable as blocks of social housing. So there are towers, apartment complexes, there are townhouse units, and so that would be more concentrated and denser. But there's also been a number of infill developments, and so there would be like a plot here and we put a house on that, and a plot here and we put a house on that. So they exist within economically mixed neighborhoods, and that is really healthy for the neighborhoods themselves and for the people who live in those units.
I think so. I remember speaking with now Mayor Danny Breen about that when he was, I believe, handling that portfolio a number of years back. Mixed-use neighborhoods, I think they call them.
Yeah, and research shows us that economically mixed neighborhoods are socially healthier, and so existing in bubbles isn't good for anybody. So it's great when you get to interact with a large number of people with different life experiences in the run of the day.
So the concentration, the highest concentration of housing units are in your ward.
That's right.
That's interesting. So mm-hmm. did you choose this committee chair purposely?
Yeah, so I have some background in this area. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of my pre-council life working with economically disadvantaged people. Mm-hmm. I went to university in Vancouver and lived in the downtown east side and sort of became galvanized in this way by that experience, as anyone who has been there mm-hmm. might be. So I lived in Vancouver in 2006 and leading up to the Olympics when homelessness was very severe. And that was a very serious issue coming from St. John's and entering into that. Mm-hmm. Was really jarring for me. And so that for me made it very obvious that this is something that is necessary for all people. And so at the city, we operate from a housing first framework, and that's best practices across the board. We understand that there is nothing that should be a precursor or a prerequisite to accessing housing. Everyone has a right to safe and adequate housing. So we're working with ways that we can sort of serve the needs of the community a little better in that way. And we are seeing more people with complex mental health needs and addictions, and we're working with community partners to figure out how we can do that, and trying to get creative and figure out ways that we can engage private landlords and provide them a layer of security as they extend that handout as well.
Sure. There has to be guaranteed income for the private owners in situations like that. I've spoken to a few who are very pleased with the situation that they're engaged with, but others who find that there are more, unfortunately, headaches than there are benefits. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there has to be a level of discourse and satisfaction on all sides.
Yeah, there's a model mm-hmm. elsewhere that we're looking to adopt here, where they provide a pot of money that landlords who are engaged in the housing first model can access if there's damage done to their units. And there's been a number of precedents where this money has existed and it hasn't been accessed at all, but just having it there as a reassurance to the landlords that we've got your back if something does happen makes them much more likely to want to rent to someone receiving a rent supplement.
Yeah, good point. How about Torbay? Let's talk about housing in Torbay. Are there any low-income units or social housing available?
There's not through the town of Torbay. There are some units in the town that are Newfoundland Labrador housing.
Okay.
But there has been a number of developments in the last few years that are geared towards seniors or low income or people on a fixed income. And those are primarily done by a private contractor or or developers, not anything that the town specifically has gotten into. I know that we recently, just the other night at our meeting, approved an expansion for four units that in an existing six-unit building now that is a rent-controlled development. So, you know, they're slowly coming on. I mean, we got our own development issues in Torbay with the capacity of water and stuff, so...
not much place for new folks to move in yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if the city would have to absorb the infrastructure as opposed to the private individual buying or renovating a lot, that would add to the burden.
Those type of projects. Those type of projects, I guess, are you know, they're economies of scale. So St. John's has 100,000 people. They got 500 or so.
Units. 450 units?
454.
Right? Yeah. Okay. You know, so mm-hmm. For us, if you did the math, would that put us into 10 or 20? Mm-hmm. I don't know. And even if we could be able to manage that, because I know that Maggie referenced earlier about the percentage of City of St. John's revenue that comes in from property taxes, 76%, I guess, I think she said, between business and residential. For us, we're over 90% residential taxes. You know, our business base is not that big. We're trying to grow it slowly but surely, and You know, it's, it would be a huge undertaking for us to do something like that.
Traditional cafe, great right? little coffee spot.
It is. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that we wouldn't look at something like that if sure. the programs were available. Uh-huh. It's just that I don't think that we're in a position right now to be able to tackle that.
Slow growth is good growth as far as I'm concerned. We're going to go to the last break for the evening. Here's a comment from Bill Harris. I think this is probably with respect to taxes in lieu of – no, wait. It's the other way around. Is it?
Grants in lieu of taxes.
I don't know why I'm having such a hard time with that tonight. Bye. It's all that seal liver aid on the weekend. Here's Bill saying, does the city use provincial roads? I think so. Provincial government uses private contractors to empty garbage bins. You collect the tipping fees, and very few employees of the provincial government use public transit. Stop blaming government and find solutions for the people. Thank you for that, Bill Harris. And his avatar photo is somebody holding up a very large word that says tax. It's like, I guess, kind of like Charles Atlas holding up the world. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate that. We'll be right back.
This is Nightline on VOCM.
Hi. We were just talking about the challenges coming up for municipalities and, of course, the province and the country with respect to marijuana and cannabis distribution. So I, for the record, I think that this will be chaos for a lot of individuals involved, particularly governments, but from my perspective, I'm going to thoroughly enjoy speaking with individuals about the chaos which will ensue. We will probably be as busy here at the VOCM talk shows as we were during Dark NL. So I'm going to say that the hashtag will be Green NL. What do you think?
I like Sounds it.
Good. Green NL? Mm-hmm. Okay. Get ready, because that's not going to be June 1st anymore or July 1st. It's going to be, I think, August 31st. They've already pushed the goalposts back by 61 days, mm-hmm. right? Whew. It's going to be very interesting to see, and perhaps we'll see it extended even further, because there's a lot to consider in terms of enforcement. We can barely enforce people having their dogs on leashes. Parking regulations, snow clearing. Where are we going to go from here? I don't know. But let's talk about that in the days to come. By the way, thank you both for coming and sharing your Easter Monday with us, and thank you to Councillor Maggie Burton for coming as well, and for Dave Lane for showing up. We'll give him a consolation prize. Don't you worry, Councillor Lane. Thank you for being so understanding, and thank you to producer Dave Williams for coming in and taking care of Patrick Myler's shift tonight, because he is down with the flu. Poor fella. Let's spend the last 10 minutes, because we do finish the show at approximately 21:57 in theory, about respectful workplace policies. This has been, I don't know, this occupies a lot of our minds, and it should if you're a decent human being, because you have to comport yourself with dignity and respect those around you. The practice versus the theory is a very different beast when you have to write policy around it. So let's start with Mayor of Torbay, Craig Scott, and then we'll go and discuss this within the context of the City of St. John's with Councillor Hope Jameson. Mayor Craig Scott. Yeah, where so is the town of Torbay with respect to respectful workplace?
Well, in the last month or so, I guess maybe 2 months, or early in this term, we created and adopted a new respectful workplace policy. And I think that is important, because you need to be able to go to work and have the feeling that you're going to be able to perform your job and not be harassed and bullied. And I mean, that's the whole purpose behind this, to provide people with a respectful and safe workplace where they can go. And that includes staff and employees at the town, as well as members of council, you know. And we as elected officials can't try and hold employees to a higher standard than what we should hold ourselves. So it's important. And you know, we've seen a lot of stories that are currently in the news and have been in the news for the last few years, between ruckuses going on in councils, and where councils are not getting along. And I think that when you set out the parameters and you have a policy and everybody signs on to it, and you agree to follow it. And it has this policy that we have adopted. There's going to be training associated with that for staff at the town. You don't just adopt a policy and throw it out there and let people try and figure it out on their own. So the staff is going to have training in this. Council will also have training in it as well. And it sets out in it examples and of what is acceptable behavior and what is not. And if something happens, the route that you should follow to get it addressed. And that includes both council and staff. It's a little more difficult with council because with regards to ramifications or any kind of, punishment is not the right word.
Sanction.
That you can do with elected officials is very limited, mm-hmm. as we've seen before with regards to many reports of councillors potentially or allegedly acting or misbehaving, and there's really council doesn't have any authority to do anything about it. But that's the downside of everything. The upside of this is that when I looked at it originally when it came out, it's 11 pages, which I think is great. That's long enough for a policy. You can sit down and read through it and understand it and ask questions. Rolling out a policy that's 50 pages, 60 pages, it kind of all, to me, it's too long, but this one, and it's very comprehensive, and I'm looking forward to doing the training and getting everybody up to speed and making sure that our municipality is a place where people can go and expect to have a respectful and safe workplace, whether you're a counselor or an employee.
It's interesting. In terms of job creation, this is the next level of security training, because one should feel secure and welcome in their workplace. I'm thinking, of course, of how since the early 2000s, North America has seen an industry grow, which is personal security and corporate security, and how one is able to navigate their buildings. Even here, during the time when Kathy Dunderdale was the premier, we saw enhanced levels of security, but we did not necessarily, I don't know at the time, see increased awareness with respect to harassment within the workplace or respect towards your coworkers. This is the new paradigm, and I think it's mm-hmm. brilliant. And where we go from here, how much money we spend, frankly, is not enough. We should be spending as much as possible to, unfortunately, you can't legislate stupid. But you have to sometimes. And if punitive damages are what is required, then yes, there has to be sanctions, as the Councillor Jameson used a word. We have to make sure that we eliminate the ignorance that is associated with thinking that you're better than somebody else. And it, I don't know, it makes me sick. But there we are. So where are we within the city of St. John's for respectful workplace policies?
Yeah, I want to start by commending His Worship for taking that step. That's really important and wonderful. We do have a respectful workplace policy and offer training to accompany it at the City of St. John's, and I'm really proud of that. I think that it's really important for us to be a model of a culture of safety and respect and cooperation. So I think our organization does a pretty good job of that at present. It, of course, as I said about housing, we can always do more. Mm-hmm. But it is really important to explicitly state that this is a place where everyone needs to feel respected and safe.
Yeah, and so feelings are difficult to quantify sometimes. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a very interesting podcast this morning at 5 a.m. and they talked about that. But once you attach an objective concept to that, such as security, mm-hmm. then you can get beyond the normative definition of what my own definition of feelings might be different than yours, for example. Mm-hmm. But when we apply it to a concept such as security or respect, then we can put the book down on the table.
Yeah, we can define more clearly what behavior is and isn't appropriate.
Yeah.
And that's the tricky thing about harassment, is it's mostly about how it's received and not necessarily about how it's delivered, which demands that each person use a degree of empathy and awareness.
Mm-hmm.
But if we make it clear that that is what we expect of ourselves and of our staff, then that becomes much easier.
Yeah, it sounds pretty simple, doesn't it, gang?
And to this, not only will this extend to employees and council with mm-hmm. the town of Torbay, but any contractor or volunteers or anything that are representing or working for the town of Torbay, they're going to be made aware of this policy mm-hmm. as well, you know, because it's easy to look after your own backyard, I guess, is for the lack of a better word, but we still have to be mindful of people that are coming in to work for the town, to represent the town, and, you know, and they have to be aware, too, of the policies that we have, whether they're HR policies or respectful workplace policy or anything to do with that, you know.
We got 2 minutes left. I'm just going to ask out loud. Do you think our resources like this would be better spent if this comes down from on high, if it's a universal policy as decided upon by the Federation of Canadian Municipalities or the conventions that happen with the municipalities in Newfoundland and Labrador or even the province themselves? Should we have a blanket policy with respect to the workplace and harassment?
I'm of two minds about that. I think really robust workplace harassment policies on a legislative level and a legal level are really important. Mm-hmm. But I think that allowing organizations to define their own culture of respect is also important. And I think that those policies are more effective if they come from that intimate level of the organizational structure itself mm-hmm. than from on high, as you describe.
Okay. Thank you for that, Councillor Jameson. What about yourself,
well, there are,
Mayor Scott?
There is still mechanisms that are in the greater law, I guess, with regards to human rights violations and mm-hmm. stuff like that a person can still pursue, but not always is something that's a cookie cutter approach that comes from somewhere else is going to fit for your particular town or your mm-hmm. particular workplace. And I think that you know, we don't need to reinvent the wheel, but I know that we probably went out and looked at policies that PMA, the Professional Administrators Association, or FCM or other organizations have, and take what you like out of what they have and kind of form it to what you want and adopt it for yourself. So something that you create yourself with the input from your staff and from your council, it's, I think, would be more effective because you had actually input into creating this mm-hmm. thing, and that you want to see it succeed rather than having something forced upon you.
Thank you for your input on this and all issues that we've covered tonight on Municipal Mondays, the first for April. Happy April, everybody. Spring is, I guess, it's officially here, although I think I heard that we're getting a snowstorm on Wednesday.
The cruelest month.
April?
April is the cruelest month.
How so?
It's that poem.
What
do you
poem?
Not know this poem?
I'm sorry. I don't.
Oh, goodness. It's. Oh, dear. I'll send it to you on
thank
Twitter.
You. All right. Thank you to Councillor Large Maggie Burton, Ward 2 Councillor Hope Jameson, both with the City of St. John's, and His Worship Mayor Craig Scott, Mayor of Torbay. Thank you for your time. Producer Dave Williams and I are going to wish you both a very happy evening. Good night, and as we say in Hebrew, Lila Tov.